Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of Life is No Coincidence, The Life and Afterlife Connection. With us today is my special guest, Dr. Eben Alexander, author of Proof of Heaven, a neurosurgeon who for most of his professional medical career was a true believer that near-death experiences were nothing more than the neurological response of a brain under stress. The concept of an afterlife is often met with skepticism, if not downright rejection, by the scientific and medical community. I, myself, personally was raised to believe that an afterlife was a philosophical and religious way to alleviate the many fears we had about death. So you might have grouped me along with Dr. Alexander as skeptics if you had known us years ago. Hello, Dr. Alexander.
Hello, how are you?
Great, and it is my pleasure to share your new book, a most beautifully written poetic and scientific version of how we survive death. Eben, Healing From Within is a radio show designed to help people pay attention to our spiritual and physical connections to multidimensional layers of the universe. A quote that reflects the intentions of this show comes from a reader in response to your book, and it says, "Anyone who is paying attention to the work of physicists know that the universe is far more complex and interesting than anything from our ordinary senses. While skeptical, I reserve judgment." Eben, you and I know and have met many people who are skeptical in regard to the concept of an afterlife. I often say to them, for those who know, no proof is necessary, and for those who do not, no proof will suffice. We ask our listeners today to really hear your story with an open mind and see the connections and miracles that prove life or consciousness survives physical death. So let's begin. Eben, please tell us briefly something about your early life and how it may have been preparation or how it may have affected the writing of this book.
Well, I grew up in a very kind of scientific home, but also one where we went to church, and my father was very much spiritual. He had been a combat surgeon in the Pacific in World War II, and I think his spirituality is what got him through all of that and helped him to do so much. And he was also very scientific. He was a neurosurgeon. He was the head of an academic training program, and so he was very into science. But for him, there was never any conflict between that all-powerful God that he knew and the science that he studied so hard. For me, at a young age, I thought science is the arbiter of truth, and I must say that growing up in the 60s and 70s, it just seemed clear to me that truth was something you got to through science. And when I would hear about near-death experiences and similar kind of spiritual journeys, I always knew that somehow that was a brain-based effect of consciousness, and that there would be some physical brain-based explanation for all these things. And that's what I thought for the longest time. As much as I would say in my younger years, I at least wanted to believe in a God and afterlife and power of prayer, but with many decades spent in neurosurgery, I saw less and less way for any kind of consciousness to survive the death of the brain and body.
Well, you know, Eben, I think in the beginning of your book, you say that you were a sensitive child and you were interested, I think you tell a story about flying.
Yes, and, very much.
And as many sensitive children, grown-ups now, who have been on my show, they often had intuitive or healing gifts and a desire to serve people. And they had many questions about who we are and what life is all about. And I think some of those questions might have encouraged you to become a neurosurgeon, which later helped you bring back a clearer view of consciousness and an afterlife after your near-death experience. You may have had those sensitivities brewing within you, and that may have already set up the direction of what was to happen with you later in life. Is that a possibility?
Yeah, I think that is very true. I think I really wanted to get to some answers, and in fact, I'm kind of surprised when I look back on it all now that I seem to believe that reductive materialist science and its explanations seem to be a pretty good path towards explaining everything. And yet I realize now, in looking back on it, especially with what my journey taught me deep in coma, that reductive materialist science has absolutely nothing to say about how consciousness might be created by the physical brain. And that is a tremendous clue as to the nature of our true existence and of the profound mystery of consciousness. And also supports very much what my journey showed me, which is that consciousness is primary, and in fact our spirit and soul as manifestation of consciousness is not created by the brain at all. In fact, it's freed up when we are liberated from the physical limitations of the brain.
So we know that the medical community believes that the body produces the mind, and when the body stops functioning, the mind or consciousness is over. And we know you found that not to be true while you were in a coma, in a state where your neocortex was shut down. Where did you find yourself, and how did you experience yourself?
Well, the meningitis was very strong and powerful. It came on very quickly. This was a severe case that, from a medical standpoint, I should not have survived at all. When I got to the emergency room, having gone into coma within hours of symptom onset, I already was down to below a 10% chance of survival. And then by not responding to the antibiotics through the week, and my neurologic picture as bad as it was, with no cortical function and lots of brainstem damage, I was down to about a 2 or 3% chance of survival by the end of the week, with no chance of a neurologic recovery. And that's why my doctors were just so astonished when, in fact, I did start to wake up on that morning of the seventh day. And it was such a powerful meningitis that it actually deleted really all of my human consciousness, memory of language, anything about humans on Earth, any personal identity, words, all of that was gone, completely gone. And so at the beginning of my awareness deep in coma, I was in this murky, coarse, kind of foamy underground, kind of like being in dirty jello, maybe with roots or vessels around me, a very primitive and coarse and unresponsive realm. And some people have said, well, don't you think that was hell or purgatory? But it really, even though I had no language, I could still wonder, who, what, where, why. And there was never even a flicker of a response from that realm to any of my curiosity.
Well, I think you called that realm in the book the realm of the earthworm's eye view. And you described yourself as limited, not human, just like a lone point of awareness in a timeless red sea. Now, that place was kind of scary, right? But then I'm happy to say you moved up from there and went to what you call the spinning melody and gateway, and it was really different there. What did you see there?
Well, that was really very comforting. I mean, I cannot put it into words. It all began as a very finely structured, clear light that was white and gold with these fine filaments reaching out of it. And it was spinning very slowly and had this lovely, perfect melody. And all I had heard up to that time was the monotonous pounding of an anvil deep underground. For eons, I had just heard this pounding sound. And then there was the beautiful light and this melody, perfect music coming towards me. And it opened like a rip in the fabric around me, in that coarse earthworm eye view. And it was a portal into this beautiful ascending valley, lush, green, fertile, flowers and blossoms opening. I had no body awareness, but I was moving up through it as a speck on a butterfly wing.
It's like
butterfly.
Yeah, it's like you had to shed your earth prasanna or a pattern of life to get beyond it from that scary place to the next dimension or realm. And you met a girl there, and I know she gave you a very special message, but it was without words that she spoke to you. Your mind just knew what she was saying. Do you remember what the three-part message was?
Oh, it was absolutely perfect and beautiful. She was dressed in the simple outfit, but very vivid colors, lovely smile, sparkling blue eyes, high cheekbones, just looking at me, never said a word, but her thoughts sprayed into my awareness. You are loved, cherished, dearly, forever. There's nothing you can do wrong in this realm, and you have nothing to fear. And it was more comforting than anything I've ever experienced, that
beautiful
love.
Yeah, you know what it sounds like to me? It sounds like what people try to express when they talk about unconditional love. And it's also what I try to express to people as a Reiki practitioner working with universal energy. It is that peace, and it is that connection to everything and everyone during a Reiki session that's so hard to explain in words. Now, Eben, the next experience you describe was in a place of clouds. And may I read how you describe the beauty of this place in words when you actually say it's impossible to describe in words? May I read that?
Yes.
Higher than the clouds, immeasurably higher, flocks of transparent orbs, shimmering beings arched above the sky, leaving long, streamer-like lines behind them. Beings more advanced, higher, and a sound, huge and booming like a glorious chant, a joy unable to be contained. It seemed that you could not look at or listen to anything in this world without becoming a part of it. Everything was distinct, yet part of everything else. Can you tell us next, after that beautiful description, what you experienced at what you call the core?
Yes, well, those memories of those scintillating orbs streaking through the sky and the anthems and chants and crescendo after crescendo was so unusual because of all the intermixing of what we normally think of as auditory and visual and everything else. This is so clearly pure experiential awareness of these things. None of it was being, you know, coming in through any sensory channels at all.
Mm-hmm.
And from there was a warm, soft summer breeze that blew through the whole scene and changed everything, because it was my awareness at that point of the divine being all through every bit of it, all powerful, all loving, all knowing. And then we went outside of this universe.
Mm-hmm.
And it all collapsed. I remember that entire scene collapsing down, and then observable universe collapsing down, and time, as we look at it in this universe, Earth time, collapsing into this loop or point, and then a much higher time, a deep time that is part of causality in that higher realm, and then higher dimensional space, and the whole thing collapsing down into this very complex, corrugated, what I called an oversphere. And at that point, we were out in the core, infinite inky blackness, but filled with light from this orb that was brighter than millions of stars. And it was right there with me, and that loving, divine, all-powerful energy of pure, unconditional love of the Creator was right there. And
I think you called him, I think you in the book you called him God or the Creator, Om. And it's the sound that in Reiki is associated with God. And you said you had an orb who was a companion and sort of interpreted what was being said to you. And I think you were told that there's not one universe, but many, far more than can be conceived of, but that love lays at the center of all of them.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. In fact, considering all of that higher dimensional and the different levels of time and causality above and beyond this realm, love was really the most fundamental constituent of it all. And evil and injustice are allowed to manifest even in these lower realms, but all as part of, as kind of trace impurities that allow for our manifestation of free will. So we have the choice to make, either consistent with all that love that is the constituent of the vast majority of the multiverse, or to work against that, as some people do in the lower realms, with lives that are not consistent with that all-powerful love. And
well,
it was,
you know,
a very powerful lesson.
You know, Eben, you gave the best explanation I have ever read for why there is evil in this physical world. And you said there were dark energy and dark matter topics that humans won't understand for years or ages. You also said that good and evil, moral concepts and religion try to deal with this. But there really is more good than evil, and that evil is only present in the tiniest trace amounts, but it's necessary in this physical realm because without it, free will was impossible, and without free will, there could be no growth.
Right.
So
exactly.
I could buy into that because, you know, we're all so frightened as we evolve and change and find more love within ourselves. Why is there evil? People want to know why God would allow evil. But when you think of it as only minuscule, only necessary in this realm, but impossible at higher levels of existence, it's okay for us to say we need some of it so that we can have it for growth. So I loved,
right,
I loved your explanation. It was simple and it was palpable, so, you know, able for us to deal with it in a way that wouldn't distress us too much.
Right. Well, thank you. Yes, it's, you know, I'm not saying it's simple to understand tragedies like
no.
what happened in Newtown, but it has everything to do with understanding that this, to me, was not some battle between good and evil and maybe someday one or the other would win, but that in fact the vast majority of the higher dimensional multiverse was constructed of that love of the Creator, and that the evil was really there just as the trace ingredient that allowed for our manifestation of free will in these lower realms. And that's why so much was explained about religious writings of, you know, a jealous, vengeful, wrathful God. Well, the people who wrote that were using dysfunctional human terms because they couldn't understand the power of that unconditional love and the fact that that God is so personal and actually feels our pain, and any pain that we have from not believing is much worse felt, you know, as God feels it compared to the way we feel it. And so, of course, that God wants for us to have faith and to know that our life is eternal, that consciousness is eternal, that in fact we come back many, many times. I mean, by knowing the eternity of our souls, which my journey very clearly showed, it made so much more sense also to realize that the eternity of souls involves reincarnation, many reincarnations. And
yes,
this is not all about one incarnation and then, you know, eternally in heaven or eternally in hell. That made no sense.
No, absolutely not. You're of course right. Now, Dr. Raymond Moody, who's a foremost authority on near-death experiences and who was one of the first guests on my show years ago, gave an endorsement on the front cover of your book, and he wrote, "Dr. Eben Alexander's near-death experience is the most astonishing I have heard in more than four decades of studying this phenomenon. He is living proof of an afterlife." Now, I have to tell you a little story of meeting Dr. Moody about 10 years ago. Yeah, it's about 10 years ago. And it was at a lecture, and he kept saying that near-death experiences seem to show life survives physical death. And I got agitated during the lecture because, as a medium, I was receiving accurate information, and I knew it was coming from a higher realm and that energy medicine was the way to incorporate healing on a multidimensional level for the soul, and the spirit to evolve and for physical life. So I wanted him simply to say what you just said, that he knew the experience to be real, that mm-hmm. he had interviewed so many people who were giving the same interpretation and description, and he knew it to be real. But I realized as a scientist, he had not had the experience had, or that I have when I connect to that realm. And so he mm-hmm. was still trying to be medically correct and cautious. But I was right. so happy to see what he wrote on the cover of your book. And I know that he always knew it to be true. We needed a little bit more time to come right. to the true realization. So for the medical community, you wrote, "My experience showed me that the death of the body and the brain are not the end of consciousness, that the human experience continues beyond the grave." So what was different from other people's near-death experiences and your near-death experience? And do you have any idea to know why your experience was different?
Well, I think the most important thing to note is that I had a very severe bacterial meningitis. And in fact, that's the crucial link. I mean, anything else that could have put me into coma would not have worked. We would not be having this discussion at all. And it's because severe bacterial meningitis is the most perfect way to mimic human death, because it destroys, very specifically, wrecks the outer surface of the brain, the neocortex. That's the part that makes us human. That's the part that allows us to have any kind of conscious experience. The neocortex is the most advanced calculator in the entire brain. And to have a human conscious experience, you must have major regions of that calculator all functioning and hooked up together. Now, the reality is most people who get as sick as I did from meningitis never come back to talk about it. And even those who live through it, if they're in coma for more than a day or two, they have permanent damage to the brain, and they certainly don't come back writing a book about their experience. Of those who might be able to come back, and again, none come back from one as severe as mine, but from a lesser case, one would come back, and if he had an experience like this, his doctors would be very quick to tell him, well, the dying brain can do anything. The dying brain does all kinds of tricks, and that person would probably take his doctor's advice and say, okay, you're right, let's forget about it.
But in my case, that didn't work. No, you had amnesia. Now, I know that because I have interviewed many people with this, who have had near-death experiences, and they all report something very similar. In many cases, they met relatives or friends in spirit. They reported having life reviews, but they all remembered their own personal identity. They didn't have the amnesia that you had, so you weren't able to remember your earthly self. And I think that's why you were able to go deeper beyond our physical realm. And you also said you weren't worried about leaving behind other people because you, at that point, weren't remembering them. So I think that's why you were granted fuller access to learning more about the true cosmic being that you are and that we all are. Is that so?
Right. And, yeah, I think that's very much the case. And in a way, I think that my journey is very much the exception that proves the rule. And that's important to understand. I mean, the key finding for me as a neuroscientist is that in my journey, as my brain was dumbed down more and more by pus and by, this very active meningitis, meningoencephalitis actually, with severe damage through and through the cortex all around the outer surface of my brain, I should have had no experience at all. And in fact, I think that's what that earthworm eye view was, about the best consciousness that brain soaking in pus could muster. And that's why it was so shocking that at the very bottom, kind of dwelling right down there at the very bottom of consciousness, the blinders would come off and I would enter into that rich, beautiful, ultra-real valley, indescribably rich tapestry of existence, going up through that fertile valley with all the butterflies and the beautiful girl and all the peasants dancing below, the souls dancing, waterfalls, the angels above, the beautiful colors, everything beyond description, just a extremely vivid, ultra-real scene when nothing should have been able to occur in my brain.
Well, I'm going to say that I believe that you were born to have that experience and to come back at this time in history to relay it as beautifully as you are able to, so that you could help many people who have had similar experiences, not in a near-death experience, but who in meditation or prayer have felt other spirit or soul near them and want confirmation and validation. And I think that's what you're giving them. And Eben, your wife Holly has a friend, Susan, who is an intuitive like me, and your wife asked her when you were in that coma to connect to your energy, and on the fourth day of your coma, Susan tapped into your energy. Want to tell us briefly what she said when she discovered your soul essence and was able to bring back a message to your wife?
Yes. Well, that was very beautiful. That's when I was kind of on my way back. I had found that the remembering the notes of the melody no longer worked to get me into the beautiful heavenly idyllic valley, and there was a lot of sadness around that, but then I was headed back to this realm and coming down through banks of clouds, and I remember seeing six faces, and that was at the very end of my coma journey after this long odyssey with many passages through those three levels. And those six faces, I could remember visually what they looked like, but I had no idea who they were. There were no names or anything because I still didn't even have language back. And five of them were the faces of people who were physically present in the ICU room around me in the last 15 hours of my seven-day coma. But the sixth was Susan Wrenches, who you mentioned. And Susan had done some channeling work. She wrote a book called Third Eye Open. And her channeling work, of course, is something that I never would have believed in or understood or even really heard of before my coma, but it involves her going into a deep spiritual level and then in that psychic realm going into the world of a person, say, in coma or other people who are unhealthy for any reason. And she says that the coma people are actually much easier to get in touch with because of where they are in this liminal realm. And she was able to contact me very easily.
Didn't she say to your wife it wasn't your time yet and your body would know what to do? And
I had
a similar story. One day I was called to the hospital for a client's father who was on life support, and I received a different message. He told me he was ready to take a rocket ship beyond this life and that his family should be happy for the wonderful journey ahead of him. And several days later when I went back to the hospital, he amended this first statement by saying he wasn't taking a rocket. He was only taking a helicopter ride, and he wouldn't be very far away. And, Eben, it's what, like you wrote. Yeah, it's like he changed his mind. Eben, it's like you wrote, this grand universe isn't far at all that you saw and that you were part of. And it's right here, it's right now, and it's what people talk about when they say having heaven on earth. Whenever we think of someone in spirit that we love, they are right by our side. And either with prayer or meditation or a spiritual practice, we can learn to connect to this energy. So I want to thank you, Dr. Eben Alexander, for sharing an honest and amazing view of physical and spiritual interconnectedness. Proof of heaven made me cry and cheer, for I have traveled the road with you to the light and beauty of eternity, and along the way have discarded many fears and restrictions, replacing them with a greater view of our human and divine life, and also recognizing our potential to love and evolve, so we may one day join all spiritual beings and share this continuity of life. Please go to Life Beyond Death to read more about Dr. Alexander's amazing journey, or visit Eternia.org, a valuable resource for scientists, teachers, researchers, theologians, and members of the clergy who are interested in understanding this dimension beyond this place that we call Earth. In summarizing today's show, as listeners of Healing From Within know, my esteemed guests and I, through shared experiences, seek answers to age-old questions about our physical being, our soul energy, life, and eternal consciousness. In the process of living a physical reality, we are given many opportunities to rediscover our dual nature. Dr. Eben Alexander has, in my opinion, clearly shown through his near-death journey what men and women of science, medicine, religion, and esoteric mystical studies search for: an accurate view of universal dimensions, higher consciousness, and an afterlife. As an intuitive who uses remote viewing, extrasensory perception, clairvoyance, and precognition, it has been my goal in every show to learn from my guests about this world of energy and the vibrations of worlds beyond this, to help people know the dynamics and miracle of life. As we access this guidance from above and aspire to refine our being, we can improve the human condition and the world we inhabit. As Dr. Alexander wrote, yes, physical space seems real, but it is limited as well. The entire length and height of the physical universe is nothing to the spiritual realm from which it has arisen, the realm of consciousness. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and invite you to listen to leaders in the field of science, spirituality, medicine, and the arts as we travel a road that illuminates our state of consciousness and helps us clear away the worries and fears of our physical life.